Hello and welcome to a Thanksgiving edition of Metal Mayhem ROC. I'm your host, John the Vernomatic Verno, and my metal partner, Metal Forever Mark. We want to wish you a happy holiday season. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode, and going up to the end of the year, we have a few more feature interviews, and we're getting ready for some exciting things in 2021. Enjoy the weekend, folks. Happy holidays.
Ready? Live from the Metal Mayhem Studios in Rochester, New York.
We are gold.
And heard around the world by metalheads just like you. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Heavy metal music.
Your weekly dose of metal music, interviews, album reviews, news, and more.
Want to be part of the show?
Send us a message through our website, metalmayhemroc.com. Or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
Search Metal Mayhem ROC.
It's getting nice and heavy.
Now, welcome our hosts, John the Vernomatic Verno and Metal Forever Mark.
Oh, it's certainly getting nice and heavy. It's Thursday night, it's 8 p.m., and it's time for Metal Mayhem ROC. I'm your host, John the Vernomatic Verno, along with my partner in metal crime, Metal Forever Mark.
Hello, Vernomatic, and Mark Weiss, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
The Weiss guy, he's here with a new book, The Decade That Rocked, 1980 through 1990. Mark is a 40-year veteran of rock and roll photography. He put together a rock and roll book chronicling some of the best pictures he's taken, had thousands of stories, some of the album covers he's done, some of the best album covers in the history of rock and roll. And we want to thank him for joining. Mark, how are you, buddy?
Thanks for the intro. Really appreciate it.
So we decided to do a book. And how did we come about this? Is it an end of the career thing where you cleaning the vaults and said, let's do something with this? How did this come about?
I didn't know we did it. I'm teasing you. I felt like it was such an undertaking. And when I got into this, I signed my contract 7 years ago, believe it or not. And 2 years into it, we decided to change the theme of it. Originally, it was going to just be a book of hair metal. Like, you know, I thought it would be an easy book to do. Just, you know, bands at their highest hair, you know, 1985, 1986, when everyone had high hair, even Ozzy. Yeah. So that was going to be it. And then after a couple of years into it, I was like, do I really want this to be my first book? And then I said to myself, all right, I got a little taste of it. I know where we need to go. I think I'm going to dig into this. Let's make this a narrative. Let's make it be about my life and how I started it and then how, you know, how it shaped me and just kind of make it kind of historic, you know, a little bit of a history timeline and how my photography kind of like trickled through the 80s, kind of shaped the look of the sound of the 80s, you know, through my photography. And so that's how it ended up. And it was just a really big undertaking. And I, you know, took my time on it. And it's just an editing process after I got to a certain part. It was definitely a work in progress until we closed the chapter, you know, about 7 months ago. And then we went into final edits and we got it to almost 400 pages. And 6 pounds, 1 ounce, over 700 photos, and here we are.
Well, doing research and reading the bio, the story is great, how you got the first camera. Explain how you did get into it and some of your early career adventures.
Well, I got into photography. I got my first camera by being this 12-year-old kid, you know, going around my neighborhood mowing lawns for $5, and one guy that usually cuts it didn't seem like he cut it for a few weeks. So I thought maybe his mower was broken or it was just lazy or something. So I knocked on his door and I said, hey, it's Mark, you know, I live down the street. I cut, you know, neighbors, you know, everyone's lawn in the area. It looks like you need a cut. And he goes, no, I cut up myself. I said, it doesn't really look that way. And he kind of like, you know, snickered at me, you know, and thought I was like a smart ass. And then he said, but I'll tell you what, I'll give you this camera. And he came back with this 35 millimeter Bell & Howell camera. if you mow my lawn for the season. And I said, okay, well, I'll do that. At that time I had no interest in it. I just saw this, thought maybe I could like hawk it at the pawn shop or something, you know, make a few bucks. But then when I got it, it looked pretty cool. And I started looking into it, and then I started taking pictures, and that's how I got started in taking pictures. And this is before I was involved with music. I used to just take pictures of my dog and my brother riding his motorcycle and things like that.
Wow. What year was this? Mid-70s, early 70s?
Early 70s, like 73 or 4, something like that. I was 12.
Okay.
And then fast forward a year, I started getting into music. My brother took me to some concerts. He was a couple years older than me. And he had a garage band that he used to play down the street, and I used to go check it out. I used to buy the albums. I started getting familiar with albums, and he had a subscription to Circus Magazine. So, you know, I was just the hand-me-down guy and kind of like took to all of it, and being the younger brother, wanted to be like my older brother, you know, around him and his friends. Mm-hmm. So I kind of gravitated that over there. And then I just started, going to concerts. And then one day a friend of the family we saw at a concert, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young at Roosevelt Stadium in Jersey City, and we just happened to bump into him, and he had this camera around him and these two hot girls, and he started walking towards the front of the stage, and we just happened to bump into him at these 50,000 people, and he told me he was going to the front of the stage to take some pictures. And I kind of watched him go into the crowd, by the front. And then like a few weeks later, I went to their house and I saw these pictures, and I just thought it was pretty cool. You know, he had the pictures hanging up in his room. He had a black light, it was an experience. And then I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. I like to do that.
Yeah,
I got a camera.
Caught the bug, the rock and roll bug. You're like, there's girls. That's fun here at the shows.
Yeah. By the way, I cut a guy's grass one time. He had no money, and he gave me a Budweiser clock, and I still have it. But I mean, I wish I got a camera.
So you grew up in the New York or New Jersey area, and so a lot of shows up in New York. How'd you take the photography to the next level?
I started going to a lot of the shows at the Garden, Peter Frampton, Jethro Tull, Boston, Aerosmith, Queen. And then, and I used to like take the pictures and develop them in my garage and bring them to school the next day. And a couple of the kids said, hey, you know, they went to the show and they wanted to buy them from me. So I said, okay, cool. So then I started selling them out of my locker. And then I used to go into the city and sell them at the concerts. So like, you know, when bands would play a couple nights in a row, I would go the first night, stay up all night, and then sell them for a buck a piece the next day on the train, at my school, and in front of the concert. And then in 77, when Kiss played, they were cracking down on all the boot sellers, on the bootleggers. And I was one of them, I was this 17-year-old kid selling my photos for a buck a piece along with the shirt sellers. And I ended up in the paddy wagon and went to jail overnight. And then the next day I went to Circus Magazine. I just, picked up the magazine that we had in the house, and I looked at the address and said, let me show them my stuff. And, maybe I can do something with that. And it was just good timing. The secretary took a liking to me. She said, hang out. The art director's off deadline in a little bit, and, maybe they'll come out and talk to you. So that's what happened. And a few months later, I submitted a photo of Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, and it ended up being the centerfold. And the rest is kind of that's how I got broke into the business. And every time like they needed more pictures, I would I would have them. And then eventually, I worked for them and on assignment, and everything kind of just snowballed. One shoot led to another, and I kept meeting people, and it just snowballed until where I am today, basically.
Hey, Mark. So first of all, congratulations. I mean, the book is just awesome. Your publicist sent us a link, so we were able to kind of see the full book. It's definitely a must have. And it was interesting because I'm trolling through pictures, and there's so many that you just recognize, whether they're from albums or from the magazines back in the day, or I think I even sent you an email saying the girl that had the Judas Priest sign up. I remember having a crush on her back when I was in high school and whatever, but I mean, you mentioned a whole other, before I go into some of that stuff though, you mentioned a whole bunch of other bands that I guess were not really rock or metal, but then as time progressed, it seems like you got way more into the metal stuff. Were you always like a metal fan or a rock fan, or did you just like all music and you just happened to kind of start shooting a lot more metal bands because they were around more that time? Can you talk just how you kind of got more into this, the metal side of things?
I like Led Zeppelin, Aerosmith, Ted Nugent. I mean, I kind of liked hard rock, you know, but also I used to hang out at Max's Kansas City and CBGB's in the late 70s. I was just, you know, 18, 19, and you could be 18 and go into bars then. And I just used to like hanging out with all the little punk rock. I used to hang out with the punk rockers and, they were just cool looking. I just loved, you know, the energy and the coolness of it. And so I kind of gravitated to that. You know, I was into Image. So that's where my interest was, were bands with Image. And then when Van Halen came out, Judas Priest and AC/DC, it's like more bands. And I kind of liked the groove of it. It was kind of very Aerosmith-y, Zeppelin-y. And I just gravitated to that. And then I started getting assignments from cover bands that played Led Zeppelin, you know, like this band called White Tiger hired me to do a photo shoot with them, and I started hanging out with them a lot, and a lot of girls around, so it turned out to be a culture, and I just gravitated to it. I was perfect age to find my own, and like everyone else my age, you know, we were all kind of looking for our own thing, and we kind of just it kind of morphed into what it ended up being for, you know, till today, really. I mean, you know, there's kids that were my age back then, you know, 17 mm-hmm. now that love this kind of music, which is great.
What I was always curious about, did you go on tour with the bands, or how did your work schedule go? Like, did your dispatcher say, all right, Weiss, you're following Aerosmith for 3 dates, and then you're picking up Boston, and then you're doing this or that. How does that logistics work out?
That's just kind of word of mouth. It's just me being a squeaky wheel and me just wanting to go have fun with the bands and finding out when they were going on tour, and knowing that if I do a photo shoot with the band on the road, that the magazines will buy them from me. So most of my photography was on spec, except for album covers and things like that. So I would just go from, you know, going on the road with Motley Crue to Rad or Dokken or Cinderella or Ozzy. You know, I would just bounce around from all tour to tour. So I would go out for, you know, anywhere from a day in the area, because there's, you know, I'm in the area where I could shoot Philly, New York City, and then New Jersey. So there's like 3 or 4 shows of a band that I can hit while they're in my area, and I could stay in my house. But you know, it was always fun going like to, you know, any town USA and travel with the band, like go on the tour bus, go on the bunks and hang out. I mean, that to me, that was like a vacation, get away from the office and just like be like one of the band guys and just hang out and party with them and take pictures. So that happened like throughout the 80s. That really never stopped.
Have you ever shot in Rochester? You ever make it up here?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Where?
Sure.
Who'd you shoot in Rochester, and where?
I couldn't even tell you who I shot like last week.
What venue? Rochester War Memorial Auditorium, or it's all a blur at this point?
It's all a blur, but all that sounds familiar.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like, you know, it was just fun. We were like traveling gypsies, going into town, going in overnight and staying over sometimes, and then partying with the locals, and then leaving the next morning and getting to the next city. It's cool.
So, Mark, so how do you then kind of transition from being, I guess, you know, one of the guys that are out on the road, and I'm sure a lot of the artists and bands started getting to know you because, you know, you kept popping up everywhere and shooting photos, but then you kind of transition into becoming either friends with a lot of them, they, you know, they show up at your wedding, or you, you know, become almost like a trusted advisor. I mean, I know you had talked about maybe, you know, helping Ozzy discover Zakk Wylde. So how do you... how did that kind of morph? Is it just because you just started developing these relationships and then you kind of built a trust and kind of took off from there?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the bands, they were just starting out, you know, like Cinderella just started out. I did their album cover before they even, you know, in the first album, a lot of bands. and same with Bon Jovi and Guns N' Roses. You know, I shot them. I shot Guns right even before their album was released. So you're in their trust in the beginning. And I never took advantage of anything. I never took anything for granted. I always give everyone the respect, you know, even if they were just starting out, they were talented. You know, it's like, if someone can get a record deal, you know, you got to give them credit, you know, however they did it, you know, music, business, it was a hard business, you know? And, I just kind of grew with them and became friends. I mean, it's just like, you know, every time I did a new photo shoot, it's like I'd have four or five new friends that I end up with, you know, till today, you know, 40 years later, I always, you know, keep my friends, you know, through the decades, you know, during ups and downs. That's part of that whole decade. Everyone was kind of tight. It was not really competitive. Yeah, there was a couple, you know, they always had those band rivalries and stuff, but not a lot, you know. Usually bands, you know, you had them open up for you, and then they would be the next big band. And then maybe the band that they opened up for, now they're on the headline, and then they give someone else a chance.
We're talking with Mark Weiss, his new book, The Decade That Rocked, 1980 through 1990. Mark, when you were out there shooting all these bands and everything, what magazines were you contributing to? You had Cream, you had Circus, you had Hit Parader. Was there any overseas stuff you worked with, Kerrang's or?
I mean, I started pretty much with Circus. Then I branched off into Faces magazine, which a friend of mine, Michael Kirk, we did a lot of, he started it. So we did a lot of different cover shoots for that. Also, I was doing things for We Magazine, where I would shoot rock stars and naked women. So that was like every month we did a different rock band or rock star. And, you know, Hit Parader, Cream, all those magazines, Metal Edge, you know, I would just submit. They were kind of like fanzines. So if I did a photo shoot with, you know, Bon Jovi, and shot them against three backgrounds, I would give one background to Hit Parader, one to Circus, and one to Faces, and, you know, make money on all three of them. And then if they wanted pictures, they wanted more of a serious shoot where it's not just a background, then the bands would usually hire me, and they use some photography for merchandise and things like that.
Let's talk some bands. How was it shooting Van Halen in the 1981 Fair Warning time? Because that tour was, I personally think, like the pinnacle of what they were doing. It was that stage was fantastic. Were those your shots that were on my bedroom wall?
Probably. I mean, they gave me a lot of access. I shot them. I first shot Van Halen in 1979. It was one of my first assignments for Circus. And it's the first time I met Eddie backstage. Actually, there's a picture in the book, full page, of Eddie, you know, smiling backstage at Convention Hall in Asbury Park. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of years later, I shot him, or a year later, I shot the Invasion tour. They were in the area, so I got a photo pass. And then I did some work for Us magazine, which gave me a lot of access to some mainstream, when a lot of the rock bands were going mainstream, so they wanted to be covered. And I was the photographer for Us magazine, so that gave me a lot of access. And that's kind of like the first time I got to really know Van Halen, because I spent a few days with him. Backstage, you know, they wanted to show the world, you know, that they were just, you know, a heavy metal rock band. They want to show them that they were the thing. So I basically followed them around and I got to know them. And then the next tour, they hired me to do some shows, and then the next one. And then when Sammy joined the band, I was hired to do their tour book. So, you know, it just keeps going. But yeah, the 81 tour was awesome. I mean, Jesus Christ, it was one of those bands that every night was a party. You know, they had the whole thing going. They had, you know, they gave out the backstage passes to the roadies, and they gave, you know, Dave gave me a few. And if David ended up with one of those roadies, one of the girls, you know, they'd throw you 100. I think there was like a bonus or something.
I got to ask you something. Did they really have the grid at the front of the stage where it was like a 1 through 10 going left or right?
Oh, yeah.
It was he would go down and say A8 and the
it was like bingo.
Yeah, we had Greg Renoff on a couple weeks ago, you know, the author of the Van Halen Rising and New Templeman, and the Van Halen the debauchery is legendary. What about like people like Nikki Sixx? He seemed to be so hands on. Was there ever a time when, you know, when you're shooting Motley Crue and the vision that he had for that band was just astounding?
Yeah, he, like the gangster shoot that we did, you know, that was all him. He told me what he wanted for the Theater of Pain. You know, we did some straight photos around some different sets. He wanted it to be different. That's when they went, you know, really glam, 85, I believe. And he wanted this gangster out shoot. So, we all got him, Tommy guns, and we got a old Rolls Royce from one of the movies back from, one of the gangster movies. I think they used it in, and I got a backdrop and smoke and the whole, it was a big production, and it ended up being in the tour book and posters and all this and that. So yeah, he's pretty visionary. But when you said he was hands-on, I'll tell you a story that when I first went on tour with them, when I was with Ozzy, they opened up. I knew them. I shot them in 82 for We Magazine with the Naked Women and Motorcycles. And that's how we first met on that shoot. So we kind of became friends pretty quick. And then in 83, they played the US Festival, which I was at, and I shot them there. And then when they went on tour with Ozzy, I was shooting Ozzy. And of course, they were, you know, they were, I was shooting them on theaters, but now they're opening for Ozzy in arenas. So they asked me Nikki asked me if I wanted to go on their bus, you know, for a few shows. And I said, sure, why not? I asked Sharon, and she said, yeah, fun. And so as he was getting on the bus, you know, Tommy Lee was on in the driver's side, and he kind of put his foot down, and he wouldn't let me go by. He like stopped me, and then Nikki kind of grabbed me and started biting my leg, and he's like, draw blood. I'm like, what do you mean draw blood? He goes, draw blood. And I didn't know what he was talking about, and so he wanted me to bite him back basically until he bled. So this went on for a while, and meanwhile Tommy's drinking the Jack Daniels, and soon enough, they started pouring down the Jack down my throat, because I was in pain, you know. And then I got enough Jack in me where I had the balls to bite him back, and I did, and drew blood, and they let me in.
Guess that's the Motley Crue rite of passage.
Blood brothers.
So I wasn't the only victim. I hear that it was a ritual whenever they had a new visitor. I guess it's the way they show that they liked you.
Hey, Mark, it was, as I was doing a little bit of show research as well, I noticed like Sebastian Bach had the unboxing video on YouTube, and his reaction was freaking awesome, because he's just like, you know, looking at all these old photos and going, man, I can't believe that one. And how has this whole thing kind of changed now with, you know, when the internet came out, and then, you know, not having to wait to get the, you know, developed photo in the green, you know, in the dark room, like, how's this whole thing morphed as times progress?
Yeah, well, you know, it definitely made it easier. You know, you don't have to go run to the store to buy film. I used to hate doing that. I used to hate dropping the film off and going through all that ritual, you know, especially when I was traveling. You'd have to go take the film out and not go through the, you know, the detector. And sometimes you get in a fight with them because they said it's okay to go through. So it was a real pain. So that was good. You know, the thing with digital, you can just shoot so many photographs, and then you spend more time editing them than you do shooting them. But you know, you get the images at least, you know, and it doesn't cost anything. I like shooting digital. As far as the internet goes, you know, it's easy to find out where bands are. You know, before I used to just have to find out through the publicist when the bands are coming around, or you just got to listen to the radio, and you knew when the bands were coming around. And you know, you usually knew when the bands were starting their tour, and I would try to get on the first few weeks of each tour. So, you know, it's just a lot more homework and a lot more on the phone. We didn't have internet, so you have to go on the phone. And I used to hate calling people up, and, you know, waiting for their call back. Now it's just you send an email and you just keep following up until they get back to you. And if they don't get back to you, then you call.
You mentioned shooting the crew at the US Festival. What was that US Festival like? I mean, I've followed it for years.
I mean, there's just so many great videos and just the fans. I mean, you were right there front row. Were you backstage in the pit? Would you move around? Like, where were you for that whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I was there for Ozzy mostly. But, you know, I kind of went wherever I needed to go. I got, you know, I found Motley. I saw Quiet Riot. I just, you know, bounced around. It was amazing. There's all those people out there. No one really expected the Heavy Metal Day to do so well, but it really did better than New Wave Day and Rock Day. And that's really, after that historic show, I mean, a lot of the record companies took notice. Shortly after that, Quiet Riot had a number one album on the Billboard charts, like the first heavy metal band to go number one.
It was right after that. I remember that. It
was, yeah. Yeah. And they were just an opening band for, I think, Iron Maiden at the time, or Judas, one of those bands, Judas Priest, or maybe Maiden.
I saw him open for Sabbath.
Maybe it was Sabbath.
Born Again. But you know how those tours always mixed up. Is there anyone that you didn't shoot that you wish you did?
Not in the genre, not in the '80s, really. I kind of shot everybody.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have gone on the road with like the Stones or Zeppelin, of course, in the '70s. That would have been cool. Or the '80s or even now. But you know, it just didn't work out. I never really pursued it. And I just kind of went where I was wanted, you know, and where I kind of where the doors opened.
So but you even got a photo of Jessica Hahn and Sam Kinison here too. I kind of forgot about those two in that video that they shot. So
The Wild Thing video. Yeah, I would always like to go to the video shoots because everyone was in hair and makeup and they had some downtime to do photo shoots. And I always took advantage of all that time to get all these photographs. So I was out there doing that, you know, a lot of special guests there. So it was like a free for all. And then Jessica Hahn. So I always like, you know, pull them all to the side to set up a little studio. And that's where I got the shot of Jessica and Sam Kinison.
And speaking of rock video, heavy metal videos, you were at the classic Warrant Cherry Pie video shoot. There's some awesome photos from that one. How did you find out about these video shoots going on? And I imagine they were going on all over the place, right? Probably in L.A. and New York. And
yeah, most of them were in L.A. So I was out in L.A. a lot. I used to stay at Don Dawkins' house and Kevin Dubrow. They gave me keys to their house when they were on the tour. So I had, you know, I could stay there for a while and not have to worry about a hotel. And, you know, I would go out there for one shoot. And then I ended up there for like a month or so and just keep, you know, people actually thought I lived out there because I was out there so much. But I found out by just keeping my ears open and, keeping contacts with the video directors and even assistants and gophers and the record company. So it's just really, you know, keeping the ears to the ears open and just, you know, making sure you find out about it. So
we're talking with Mark Weiss, his new book, The Decade That Rocked, 1980 through 1990. I've been doing a little research and you have a program going on. Any fans in this book, if they spot themselves, has anyone contacted you and said, "Hey, that's me in Carolina in 88.
Yeah, well, the girl in Judas Priest,
I was gonna ask you about her.
She reached out to me and she was all freaked out. She actually has the original sign and the tickets and some really good stories. She actually went backstage after that show. And that photo was a color photo in Circus Magazine back in the day. And then when she saw the photo in there as a double page spread, she just like flipped out. And we've been in contact with each other. And I'm going to like on my site now, I'm actually looking for the three girls that were at the Def Leppard concert in 1984, I think it was. And there's a picture of them. They're holding up panties and it's on my site, thedecadethatrocked.com. So I'm trying to find one of those girls. And if they kind of like, locate me and they can prove that's them, I was going to give them like a print from that show and the print with their girlfriends, you know, and a t-shirt. So that's something I'm going to be doing more of.
That's awesome. I guess now with Facebook and Twitter and everything, with social media, you could post all that stuff up. So that's pretty cool. Yeah,
definitely.
Any thought about doing a follow up, but maybe a book from the 70s because you shot a lot in the 70s?
I don't think I'm going to do one on the 70s, but I think the next one's going to be, well, I want the next one to be one band, whether it's Bon Jovi or Guns N' Roses or Motley or Ozzy. And then because I was really wanted a tour and do a book tour, and because of the pandemic, obviously everything was shut down, I was going to like shadow a lot of the stadium tour, like Motley would be playing, and maybe I was trying to make arrangements with Live Nation where, you know, I could set something up the day before, do some promo, go on some radio stations, do some charity events, a book signing, and then, you know, shoot the show, you know, and do that, and follow them around, then go out with, Sammy Hagar or Whitesnake or whoever. There were so many tours going to happen this summer. I was going to get in Winnebago and just travel around the country.
Yeah.
So since that didn't happen, when it does happen, everyone's like a year from now, let's say. And that's if we're lucky. So that's what I want to do. But so I have like a year to come up with another book, and I want to do another book with one of the artists, and then I can do like a book tour and promote both of those books. So that's kind of like the plan.
Where can people find this book?
Well, Mark Weisguy is on Twitter and my Instagram and my Facebook, Mark Weisguy, mm-hmm. WEISSGUY. And the decade that rock.com is really my brand. So I have a YouTube channel that has a bunch of stuff on it, interviews, talking about me, talking about the time, a lot of different people on it, have some of the reviews, and I have a merch shop where I have signed prints, a t-shirts, the book, I'm selling the book, you know, with postcards and, you know, sign them, personalize them with a little message and note. So, the decadethatrock.com is definitely across the board. Plus I have the decadethatrock.com Instagram and Facebook as well.
So basically just search Decade That Rock, and we'll have all this on our Facebook
page. We'll tag
them
out when we post the interview.
All right, cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, we just want to get into the last segment on the Mount Rushmore, and we'll see what your thoughts are on some of your top shoots.
Many have tried, most have failed, only a few survived. This is the Mount Rushmore of metal.
We're here with Mark Weiss, Wise Guy, his new book, The Decade That Rocked, 1980 through 1990. So, Mark, your Rushmore top four artists that you shot?
Well, the bands that I shot that I would say are on Mount Rushmore would be Guns N' Roses at CBGB's. I would say Bon Jovi when I did the Slip Room Wet, because that was such a, like, you know, that was like four or five shoots. That was just like a craziness, you know, from the girl being, you know, using the girl on the cover, then ended up being the plastic bag. And then the Stay Hungry shoot was pretty cool. That kind of gave me my big start.
Wasn't
with doing
like,
album covers.
I read somewhere that it was like a 22-hour shoot.
Yeah, it was I really beat those guys down for sure. Yeah, and we didn't get the shot until at the very end when D stuck around and kind of like just grabbed the bone and just started going crazy.
And the story with the bone, some butcher brought it?
No, I actually went down a week before to get this bone because Mark the Animal Mendoza came up with this idea to shoot the band in a persona, you know, with makeup and then in street clothes. And we're going to have these rats in the room. And so I built this room and they were supposed to be in it together. They wanted like a bone, you know, Stay Hungry. So I went out to the butcher down the street and got this big, I said, how much is that bone? He goes, you could have it. You know? So I grabbed the bone and I just left it in there. It stunk. It was in the studio for like a week.
Oh
And then a couple of the guys in the band were like, you know, kidding around and weren't really giving me it. And D was kind of like pretty calm. Like he was just, he didn't want to overshadow him. So he wasn't really giving me his most. And it's the first time I met these guys really, you know, at the shoot. You know, we got a lot of cool shots, but we really didn't get the shot. You know, we didn't know until later that we didn't get it. At the end, I just said, hey, D, you want to, I actually asked everyone, anyone want to stick around and do some more individuals? And everyone's like, no, we're getting out of here. We're going. And then D's like, I'll stick around. And it's almost like he wanted me to like ask him to stick around, you know, because, you know, he really didn't give me this. I knew he had more in him and I just met him. So I didn't really know what he had, but once I had him to myself and I threw the bone at him, he started going crazy, you know, and that was the last shot of the frame of 36 frames on the camera roll. And that was the shot we ended up using.
And then that ended up being, it's like one of the most iconic metal CD covers of all time. Right. And it was, like you said, the last one. It's crazy how that happened. Hey, Mark, so another Mount Rushmore. And as I was going through this book, I'm seeing all these great photos of all these bands and artists. And then I'm like, well, the 80s was also the decade of all this backstage debauchery and heavy metal women and women in videos. And lo and behold, we get to the New York 82 pages and here's all these photos with these women. Are there four photo shoots that involved heavy metal girls, I guess, for lack of a better term, that stick out in your mind from the ones
I would say that's definitely a Mount Rushmore, the Motley Crue with the girls, because, you know, first we got together and we talked about the shoot, you know, a couple of weeks before, and we all got together and got shit faced and got thrown out of the restaurant, you know, and then we ended up at the Rainbow. But then we got to know each other and then we talked about the shoot. And then I got the girls at this Jim South modeling agencies where these girls come in and they spin around and they take up their clothes and you pick them out. And so I knew it was going to be a fun shoot. And the band got there, they brought their motorcycles, they brought their candelabras, and, you know, to have this persona like shown to the world like this, like no other band has done before. It just set the stage for who they were and who they are. And, you know, it just, we became instantly like friends. It was fun. Oh,
man. And I even see Carmen Appice's got his Rock Confessions photo too. I actually remember that cover too. So, man, these are just incredible. Man, you did an incredible job. I mean, this is just any fan of this genre of metal, rock, the 80s, whatever, like, it's unbelievable what you captured and how you put this all together and all the artists that have come out just saying great things about this book and you and what you've done. This is awesome. Yeah, we're excited. I mean, I can't wait to get a copy, to, you know, hard copy. So I have it.
But Mark, we'll let you get going, but hey, thanks a lot, man. It's like Mark says, great work. We've been looking at this for 35 years. I grew up on it, lasting impression, memories, and whenever it's a creative process, your work will stand the test of time, and it's a credit to you. I want to thank you for your work.
Thanks. Thanks. And I also have on the YouTube channel, I have a little series that I started. It's called The Weiss Guy. It's about these two guys from the 80s that never grew up, and they stalked me. And I have special guests on it. Like on this first episode, we have Chips Enough and Brian Weed from Tesla. And it's these two guys that sneak backstage and they stalk me. And, you know, it's like a 12-minute little episodic adventure that I'm working on. So that's fun. And I got a skateboard line coming out with some of my images and also a shirt that's going to be women's shirts and like some of the high fashion boutique stores. So, you know, we're trying to carry on the decade and, you know, brand it as it should be.
Mark, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time. And once again, great job with this book. It's pretty awesome.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Take care, bud.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Metal for Life.
Thanks for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our websites at metalmayhemroc.com and metalforever.com for information on upcoming concerts, podcasts, archives, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share.